Aloha and welcome to Our Homes, Ending the Housing Crisis. My name is Stanley Chang, and I'm a state senator in Honolulu, Hawaii. We're here to understand housing more deeply and seek new, innovative solutions from all over the world to the severe housing crisis here. But many of the lessons may also apply to your community, wherever you may be. And now, on with the show. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Our Homes, Ending the Housing Crisis. We have a very special guest today, Sanford Murata. Born and raised in Honolulu, he spent over 50 years as a real estate professional. His early appreciation for Hawaii's natural environment and interest in sustainable land use led him to study architecture and urban land economics at the University of California at Berkeley. He's been involved in the planning, development, and ownership of a range of real estate projects throughout Hawaii. He's here today to present a bold new idea, a new Alawai village. Sanford, welcome to Our Homes, and please take it away.
Thank you, Senator Chang, and thank you for inviting me to participate in your Our Homes series. I feel privileged to do so and to share some thoughts I have on the subject. And thank you to Lynn, your office manager, and to Chelsea for your technical assistant. And thank you to all the webinar participants. I'm glad that you're joining us, and I'm hopeful that we have a lively conversation. Also, thanks to Elsie Rose, who prepared the PowerPoint, which we'll share, and to Glenn Miura, architect, who prepared the conceptual sketch, and to the many others who shared their ideas and provided advice, suggestions with regard to the big plan that I will discuss today. A little bit of additional background. I was born and raised in Kaimuki. Consequently, I know a lot about this area since I spent my youth in Kapahulu, Kaimuki, Alawai, Waikiki, and throughout the islands, hiking, camping, swimming, fishing, and just experiencing and enjoying our beautiful natural environment. And as Stanley mentioned, I studied architecture and urban land economics at UC Berkeley in the 60s. And at that time, when you study architecture, you become a critic of your environment, both the built and natural environment. So consequently, that has always been with me in terms of looking at what we do to our environment and how we can make better use of what of our natural resources. So let's begin with our images. So my vision for our homes is to start with the idea to only make big plans. Next slide. Okay, so here's a quote, quite famous architect, American architect and urban designer, Daniel Burnham from Chicago. And this is repeated a lot because it's something that I think we all need to embrace in terms of what we do with our environment. So make no little plans, just they have no magic and they don't stir men's blood and probably themselves will not be realized. And that's true. Little plans go almost nowhere. So make big plans, aim high in hope and work. Next slide. So many of our schools, parks, playgrounds, and other publicly owned lands are not being used to their full potential and should be repurposed for better use to serve our community. So this big plan comes from a big idea, and big idea is to transform the Alawai Golf Course together with the Alawai Canal into two integrated projects. The Alawai Green, a biodiverse, multi-use natural resource park, and Alawai Village, a model affordable housing community. Next slide. So Waikiki exists today as a result of the building in 1921 of the Alawai Canal. It was built to drain the wetlands fed by the streams from Pololo, Makiki, and Manoa valleys. And the material of the dredging of the canal was used to create Waikiki. And as you might have seen recently in a looking back news, it was also used to create what is today Halemaumau Center. And the dredged canal is the primary drainage system for central and east Honolulu. Next slide. So this is what could happen. I know it's quite a dramatic image of what might happen if we don't have a well-designed stormwater management infrastructure and flood mitigation and control plan for the 19 square mile Alawai watershed. So it's likely that heavy rainstorms, hurricane and ocean water storm surges could cause the streams and canals to overflow and flood Waikiki and the surrounding neighborhoods. So let me share with you what's being done in China in their sponge cities. Let's show this video.
It's raining again in China. None of us like the rain, but here it's gone from mild annoyance to a serious problem. Once a largely rural country, China now has more than 100 cities with populations of over a million people. And all that building on former farmland has led to a major downside: flood. But instead of constructing big barriers like others have done, China is turning back to nature for the solution, upgrading its cities so that they welcome the water rather than hold it back. Get yourself comfortable and prepare to soak up China's sponge cities. China's home to more large cities than any other nation. 60% of its 1.4 billion citizens now reside in urban areas, and creating the space for them to live, work, and play has meant replacing huge areas of green space with sprawling buildings and infrastructure. That's a lot of land that would have previously absorbed rainwater being replaced with surfaces that do the opposite, and all in a country that regularly experiences heavy storms. Little surprise then that flooding's become such a serious problem, even in places with good drainage. In 2020, over just 2 months, more than 400 rivers flooded across China, many of them worse than ever before, and at least 50 million people were impacted. On top of that, water shortages are occurring in some cities where water runs off the streets too quickly to enter water systems that are already overstretched. The response from China's government was to mop up this mess and convert many of these areas into so-called sponge cities. This is where areas are redesigned to cope with and process rainwater in a few different ways: soaking it up, storing it, and then releasing it when needed, a bit like, you guessed it, a sponge. Now, this usually involves combining what's known as grey and green infrastructure, so things like advanced drainage and water treatment systems, alongside natural and semi-natural areas. The US, Russia, and India have all dabbled in sponge cities, but China's program is on an entirely different scale. Brace yourself for quite a few numbers. 16 cities were chosen to be part of the scheme when it launched in 2015, and another 14 joined a year later. The aim is to have 80% of these 30 cities absorbing and reusing 70% of rainwater by 2030. Hopefully you followed all that. That means massive changes to land use, surfaces, underground infrastructure, and more across the world's most populated country. Although it sounds like a lot of work that needs to be done in not much time, this is China we're talking about, so of course they've already made huge progress. Chongqing, which has a population of over 16 million, can now rather grandly call itself one of China's leading sponge cities. Here, a new park in the Tongnan district helped the area quickly recover from the worst storm for 100 years in 2020. Up until 2019, just a small concrete barrier separated the Fu River from land that was becoming increasingly vulnerable to flooding. Now the barrier's gone, and when levels rise, water is free to flow into this incredible maze of constructed wetlands. Built over 99 hectares, it's an impressive network of native plants, trees, ponds, islands, and elevated walkways, making it more than somewhere for excess water to go. People want to be there too, soaking up their surroundings. Chongqing was also the first sponge city to be given a smart digital control system, which lets authorities monitor its sewer and stormwater networks in real time. With this, they can control how water flows into the natural environment more precisely, analyze how well the whole system performs in extreme weather, and then use the data to prevent future floods. To the east of the country, on the banks of the Yangtze River, Zhenjiang has also gone big with sponges. As well as rain gardens and creeks that drain and retain rainwater, the city's been equipped with a system of bioswales, which stretch for several kilometers in total. These specially engineered channels with sloped sides funnel stormwater inside, where it filters down slowly into the ground beneath, often with debris and pollutants removed as part of the process. Go for a stroll in any decent sponge city, and you'll also find permeable roads, paths, and cycleways, all of which allow water to soak directly into the material instead of forcing it into drainage systems that can become quickly overwhelmed. Polyurethane binders are combined with gravel or stones to create a surface with similar properties to concrete or tar, but with tiny cavities that let water through. Around 4,000 litres of water per square metre can be absorbed each hour, and there are now networks of these across China, from Tian'an City to Hangzhou, which is set to host the 2022 Asian Games. Now, that event is actually relevant to this video because this site for the tournament was designed as one big sponge city project, a fantastic place to soak up the sporting atmosphere. Previously a flat piece of land, the area is being transformed into a 116-acre eco-park spread across a rolling hillscape. Rainwater will be collected, filtered, and reused for water features, plumbing, heating, and cooling, according to Architectonix, which designed the master plan.
Thank you, Elsie. Okay. So as you can see, there's a huge risk and resource management challenge in front of us. And there's a big plan in China. But we don't have that kind of a big plan that is occurring in China, but we have a big plan. And the big plan rests on this big idea that I'd like to share with you. This is a sketch prepared by Glenn Miura, an architect, of what I call Cool Hawaii. And it consists of about two-thirds or 90 acres of the 138-acre golf course, which would be developed into what I call the green, or Hawaii green, which is a natural resource park. As you can see, it's on the left-hand side of the sketch, about two-thirds of the golf course. And the remaining 48 acres, or one-third, would be Aloai Village, which is an affordable housing community, mainly on the Mauka and Diamond Head sides of the golf course. So we can see with some real innovative thinking, we changed the configuration of the Aloai, as well as the tributaries that add to the Aloai to create this wetlands. It was very conceptual. There's no feasibility analysis behind it. It's just a big idea. Next slide. So in addition to the housing, which would be in mixed density, low and mid-rise buildings, would have retail on the ground floor with about 3,600 residential units, or 75 units per acre. This is just a guess. And they would be, at the moment, sold. These would be for sale units on a 99-year lease from the city. And they'll have also convenience and service amenities. Next slide. So I'm just going to show you some images of what could happen. Some of these are quite visionary, and whether we can create anything like it is a challenge, but something to aspire to. Next. So these are actual projects underway. Some of it has been built, and some of it are concepts to be built. But as you can see on the top slide, it kind of reminds me a little bit of our situation, the canal on the right side of the screen and an ocean on the left-hand side, which looks like a little bit of a marine area on the far left side. Next. So more concepts of high density urban villages. And this one has what looks like a beautiful park between buildings on the top right and lower left. Vignettes on the bottom. I like the vignette, particularly on the right side, because it shows lots of opportunities for people to gather. Next. So village amenities would include child and elder care, preschool, medical clinic, and health and social services. And what we expect that the ground would consist of many parks, walking paths, bikeways, and abundant landscaping. The image on the lower left, as you can see, what a great opportunity for people to be in this case, it looks like an outdoor cafe, but bordered by water and recreation around it. Next. Can't you envision something like this in a kind of a restored park from the Alawai Golf Course? Next. So the Alawai Golf Course was built in 1931, consists of 138 acres. And the only built improvement is the golf course clubhouse. Consequently, we don't have to knock anything down. And we'll incorporate the golf course clubhouse into the project. Next. So let's talk about the Alawai Green. What we would do is we would restore the former wetlands, and it would serve as a natural retention basin for the collection of rainwater from the valleys in a complex of reservoirs, ponds, and waterways. Debris, soil runoff, and pollutants brought from the upstream water flow would be removed after passing through a series of gates and a multi-stage filtration system before entering the Alawai Canal. So this is what the green would consist of. Two-thirds of the golf course, 90 acres, a multifunction natural resource park. It would add, serve as a storm and flood control infrastructure system. Would be a water conservation management area, consisting of wetlands, reservoirs, ponds, with a natural wildlife habitat, and very importantly, an urban forest, farms, gardens, and recreational areas. Next. So instead of permanent flood walls, and we would use earthen beams and other landscape engineering, which would prevent the flood water from overflowing into and out of the streams and into the canal. The debris, soil runoff, pollutants would be brought from the upstream water flow and would be removed after passing through a series of gates and a multi-stage water filtration system before entering the canal. And we hope that organic methods would be used to filter and clean the water and maintain a balanced water quality. Restored wetlands and ponds would become wildlife habitats, especially for native species. Other uses of the green would include an urban forest with native plants and trees, fruit, flowers, and vegetable farms, and community garden. Natural carbon sinks. Trees offer one of the most effective and simplest methods to counter climate change. The unpolluted recycled water would be used for the forest, farm, and gardens. The products would be sold at the Greens Farmers Market. There would be an abundance of natural open spaces, including walking, biking, and jogging trails, and exercise, recreation, relaxation, and picnic areas. After the rainwater from the Malka watersheds is collected, settled, and filtered, it will be allowed to flow into the canal by way of a system of controlled gates. So here's a project in Singapore, which I'd like to share with you. This is an amazing project, and we can do something like this.
Of five rivers across the Marina Channel to create Singapore's first urban reservoir. The reservoir boosts Singapore's water supply, alleviates flooding in low-lying areas, and provides a new lifestyle attraction and venue for recreational activities. To exemplify Singapore's commitment in environmental and water sustainability, the barrage is designed with environmentally friendly principles in mind. Designed by Architects Team 3, features such as a massive roof garden, solar panels, and a rainwater collection system were incorporated. The green roof is accessible via a lift inside the main complex, or visitors can walk up through. The Marina Barrage is a 350-meter-wide dam built at the confluence of five rivers across the Marina Channel to create Singapore's first urban reservoir. The reservoir boosts Singapore's water supply, alleviates flooding in low-lying areas, and provides a new lifestyle attraction and venue for recreational activities. To exemplify Singapore's commitment in environmental and water sustainability, the barrage is designed with environmentally friendly principles in mind. Designed by Architects Team 3, features such as a massive roof garden, solar panels, and a rainwater collection system were incorporated. The green roof is accessible via a lift inside the main complex, or visitors can walk up through its beautifully arched looping pathway. Visitors to the Marina Barrage are free to play, picnic, or simply relax on the expansive recreational space provided by the green roof. Under the lush sloping green lawn and recreational space on the green roof lie 14,000 square meters of VersiCell drainage modules by Elmic, made from 100% recycled plastics. The sprinkler system on the rooftop is linked to sensors which detect water from rainfall. Marina Barrage says, "The grass and soil shield the building from the sun and reduce maximum surface temperature by 3 degrees centigrade. Double glazed glass panels on the building also reduce heat, and the 405 panels of the solar park atop the green roof generate about 50% of the daytime electricity needed for indoor lighting and power points at the barrage. The green roof commands a panoramic view of Singapore's cityscape to one side of the magnificent Marina Bay Sands, the adjacent gardens by the bay and its magnificent cloud forest conservatory, and the Singapore Flyer. It also affords an unobstructed view of the harbor and amazing views of the South China Sea on the other. Marina Barrage is truly a showpiece of environmental sustainability and a beautiful multi-purpose attraction." For more information about this project and many more, come and join our projects of the week.
So this is the kind of thinking, this is the kind of big planning that we need to consider and hopefully undertake to meet the risks that we would be facing with climate change. Envision the Alawai Canal will be free of sediments and pollutants, and it would be an ideal recreational area. The silt that is discharged at the west outlet of the canal would be significantly reduced, thus minimizing the adverse impact on coral and marine life. we would plan the entire area to be engineered to anticipate rising sea levels caused by global warming, and the impact of which is potentially and significantly more devastating than stormwater flooding. An operable gate near the ocean opening of the Awalai Boat Harbor would control flooding from the ocean brought by the rising sea levels in a tsunami. That's what the barrage does. Both projects we plan for net zero energy use and include a comprehensive recycle, reuse, reduction, and zero waste program. Next slide. This is a wonderful slide, and I picked up the description of placemaking from Wikipedia. And I was very impressed, not only the image, because it's somewhat comparable to our situation with water and what looks like a mixture of low and medium, maybe high density uses. But I like the description, particularly the last section, creating public places or spaces that promote people's health, happiness, and well-being. I think that's what we should be doing in terms of using our public our public lands. Thanks. So this is what the big plan or the big idea is all about. It's using our public lands more effectively to serve the urgent multiple public needs. It's formulating dynamic risk and resource management strategies to meet evolving conditions and potential natural disasters. It's conceiving and creating a resilient, sensible, and sustainable natural resources conservation plan, which balances humanity and nature and is unique to and appropriate to our island home. It's generating community-wide collaboration and consensus in our placemaking. So this is an amazing aerial shot. And this is sort of what I'm promoting. It's transforming a gem in our backyard. As you can see, look at what's in the middle of this aerial. That's the golf course, 138 acres. And then on its left, Makai side, is the canal. And look at Waikiki, hard on the shore of Waikiki Beach, Malama Bay, downtown towards the upper left, coming back down towards the golf course, our neighborhoods, Makali, and then across from the golf course, O'ili'ili, then up towards the valleys, Manoa, Kiki, and Palolo. So I can see a tremendous opportunity here. And the good news is it's sitting there waiting for repurposing, rediscovery, and redevelopment to serve our needs. And here's a way in which we can combine attending to the hazards or disasters that could occur from climate change and flooding, as well as creating more homes. So these are the two, to me, you know, in addition to the current crisis, a pandemic crisis, to me, the big challenges we have, maybe throughout the world, but assuredly for Hawaii, Honolulu specifically, is to plan for climate change disaster, number one, that's the risk and resource management aspect, as well as providing homes. We are somewhere between maybe today 40,000 units short and upwards maybe 50,000 in the next 4 or 5 years. So we're not going to be able to create 40,000 or 50,000 or even 25,000 new homes with building 50 units here and 200 units there. We need to grasp big projects and create thousands of homes at one time, 4,000 homes at once. Otherwise, the piddling ideas will really not serve any purpose. And finally, one of the things that I was struck by this slide, in particular this image, if you look at sort of the upper right, you can see the rainbow. So I feel somewhat encouraged looking at opportunities that we have. We just need to be bold, have some political will and courage to pursue projects like this. So my idea is not so much that I don't know whether this is actually going to be realized, but the intention is to provoke discussion, to try to find a way to generate traction for the idea. It doesn't have to be this idea specifically, but the idea of using our lands, our public lands, much, much more innovatively so that we address the challenges that are in front of us and hopefully solve problems. You know, we're not, unfortunately, we don't have the sort of the power structure that allows things like that happens in China and Singapore. But I think we need to, as citizens, get out there and be not afraid to promote ideas such as this. So that sums up my presentation. I would be happy to have a conversation with all of our attendees. Thank you, Senator Chang.
Thank you so much, Sanford, for a really thought-provoking presentation on a really big idea. And we've already gotten some questions in the chat. We'll try to get to as many questions as possible in our limited time. But maybe we'll kick it off with a basic question about the feasibility. What do you think this type of project would cost? And how do you think we in Hawaii would be able to pay for it?
As I mentioned earlier, this idea is purely conceptual. I purposely avoided doing any kind of financial analysis, which is my background as a real estate developer. One of the first things we do is to test the feasibility of any idea, be it the market support, financial feasibility, and or funding. As you ask, where is this money going to come from? So let me just kind of toss out an answer to what you just asked. Well, if you look at some studies that I know you've undertaken, Stanley, we've got 3,600 units as a kind of a target amount. And so if you say each one of those costs $300,000 per unit, that would be one way to stab at that cost. But of course, an unknown cost is to convert these lands to wetlands. And I haven't studied that, nor have asked anyone to study that. So it's a little too early for me to project what this is going to cost, but easily in the hundreds of millions. I don't know if it'll cost $1 billion, but you know, as a frame of reference, the rail is going to cost maybe $12-15 billion. And let's say this project would cost $1 billion. I would say if we spent 1/10 of what it costs to pay for a rail, which is questionable in terms of its potential success, I can see that it's way more worthwhile to spend it here than in the rail. I'm sorry, it's an indirect answer, but I don't have a better answer than that at the moment. Oh, and you asked about the second part was about the funding. Well, if we offer the land at 99-year leases from the city, dollar a year rent, then it'll be paid for by the buyers of the units. If we're doing non-sale units, for instance, rental apartments, we'd have to find funding elsewhere. As an example, perhaps owners of the resort properties in Waikiki would be willing to build workforce or employee housing for their employees, and they would pay for it and fund at least some portion of the units.
Speaking of the flood control aspect, how much do you think the existing Alawai golf course's flood control capacity could be expanded by using the newest technologies that were highlighted in the videos that you played in the presentation?
Well, I think it's entirely doable. And if we step back and say, where did we come from? And that's, to me, something that we as human beings turn our back on, and that's nature. We often fail to look at natural solutions, natural ways. So this was a wetlands before it was canal was dredged and converted to a golf course. I think it's entirely feasible. And again, you know, it's like, if you put, let's put cost aside. Well, let's look at it from this aspect. What's the risk reward, right? So if, as shown in one of the earlier images, if we have devastating flooding, and it does flood Waikiki as well as the surrounding neighborhoods, can you imagine the tremendous cost that would be incurred? Not only by the property owners, be it hotels or residential community property owners, but the effect to our economy, because we have not found an alternative to our visitor industry as a viable source for our economic foundation, which means for now, if Waikiki was significantly impacted, adversely impacted, it will have a great economic impact on Hawaii's economy. And that was shown up in the current pandemic. The lockdown really showed that up.
One of the specific impacts that the introduction of 3,600 new housing units might have is the need for those residents to commute to their workplaces. And it's already in a pretty urbanized, pretty congested corridor, that Kapahulu area, Mo'ili'ili area. How would you address concerns about traffic impacts that the neighbors might have?
Well, that's the beauty of this idea, I believe, and that is to find a way to establish a public transportation system internally. And let's say most of the folks who would live here would be, if they're working, be working close by. So let's say a good portion of the folks who would either buy a unit here or occupy a unit through some kind of employee housing program would work in Waikiki. So they could walk to Waikiki, they could walk to their jobs, they don't need a car, or they could be some kind of a public shuttle system between Waikiki, their jobs, and the village. So too, folks who work in, let's say, UH Manoa, they could walk to work. If I was, say, a faculty member, a young faculty member, and I could have a unit here in Alawai Village, and I could walk to work in, say, 15 minutes away, wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't I want to live in a place like this next to the green, next to Waikiki and the surrounding communities? So one of the approaches is to find ways in which whatever we do and wherever it is throughout the city, find ways to reduce the impact of cars and parking. So this would be an important part of the planning of this project, creating a multimodal public transportation system, and hopefully reduce the number of cars that would be required, because people can walk. They can walk to Alamana Center, they can walk to jobs all around in the neighborhood, possibly. My whole idea in this urban design concept is to, instead of moving people from place to place, is to move the place to the people. Therefore, you don't have to have people get into some vehicle to go someplace else. They'll be nearby.
That's a really interesting idea. And a reframing of a concept that is going to be unfamiliar to a lot of people. You started by talking about how you wanted to propose a big plan and that small plans were likely to fail. How do you think that people will respond to such an ambitious proposal that does have such a high price tag that would impact a community in this way, that would impact a lot of existing stakeholders, such as the golfers who currently use the golf course? Do you think that you can inspire a new movement to support a major construction project like this instead of opposing it?
Well, that's a challenge. And yes, I'm sanguine. I would say we as citizens, and from my point of view, I'm a senior, and I'm sort of at the end of my line. So I will not directly be I would not be directly benefit from this, right? So, but let's look at our children and grandchildren. And one approach to avid golfers, those particularly who want to golf at the Alawai Golf Course, is to say, okay, fine. You've kind of had your opportunity. You've had the benefit of the golf course since it was developed 80 years ago. But now we need to change. We did something great for golfing, for our residents and visitors, because it's at one time the highest used golf course in the United States. However, we cannot live in the past. We cannot live in the way we used to live generations ago, right? I mean, we're changing. The whole, our life has changed. We had plantations three generations ago. We don't have plantations today. So what do we have? We have need to house our people. We have need to keep children who are born and raised in Hawaii, want to live in Hawaii, to have an opportunity to stay here because they have a way to buy a home. So an appeal, sort of maybe emotional, to the golfers to say, look, you've had a chance. Now let's give our younger people an opportunity. And while they may be golfers or not is beside the point. What's more important to you? Is it more important for you to play golf conveniently in your backyard every weekend versus allowing your children and grandchildren and others after our generation to have a place to stay, to have a place to live, to have a place at home? Would you wish to have your 21-year-old grandchild just graduating from UH Manoa to move to someplace else out of Hawaii because they don't have a job, nor do they have a place to live, versus giving them this opportunity? Wouldn't you rather see your grandchild in Hawaii rather than you having to get on a plane and go visit your grandchild? So it's a kind of a emotional message. I agree with that, and it's a real difficult sell, I believe, because people are going to immediately react to, no, I want my golf course. But maybe in the context of that issue is to say, okay, we'll have a golf course, it's going to be someplace else. It doesn't have to be here, does it? It's here, it's convenient, but maybe for now we need to have the golf course someplace else. So it's really hard. I don't have a plan on how to achieve this. It certainly needs several very key messengers to sell the idea. But it really takes, I think, a real range of messengers from the person who just graduated from University of Hawaii. Says, look, I want to stay here, Mom. What can I do? To the elected officials, council folks, mayor, administration, state officials, politicians. It's got to be a broad messaging campaign, and it could take 10, 20, 30 years, but if we don't start now, it'll never get done. You have to start somewhere, right? The first step is on a journey is the first step. So we need to take some steps. And what I'm doing is just sharing my idea and hope that it'll get traction along the way. And where it takes traction, who knows? But if we don't try, it will never come about.
How did you arrive at Alawai Golf Course as the primary site you'd want to focus on? In the chat, one of our listeners, John Kawamoto, wants to know, are there other locations where this type of concept could be applied?
Well, let me go back and just say a little bit about my background. So I studied architecture at Berkeley. And one of the, important teaching elements of studying architecture is you become a critic. And you have to criticize your own work, and people criticize your work. So when you do a project, it's put up on the board and you look at it and everybody criticizes your work, including particularly your professor. So that ingrains in you a sense of, okay, let's look around. Let's see what we've done to our environment. And let's look, and what happens is we become ultra critics. Almost everything that's built is bad, ugly, could be done better, et cetera. So that's ingrained in you, but if we keep our eyes open and look around and say, what can we do to improve our natural environment, our built environment, and just sort of look for opportunities. So I do this all the time. And one of the trigger points for me was when I went to Shanghai. In Shanghai, there's a Shanghai City Design Center. And there's a government building, and one floor of the government building, this whole floor is devoted to a model of the city of Shanghai. And every building in Shanghai is on that model. What a tremendous sort of device to see all at once in a very big picture, in this case, Shanghai City. So we need to do that. We need to look, whether we build a model or not, we need to look at all of our lands as well as our coastal fronts, our reefs, and see what's out there. So because I grew up in this area, you know, I used to go crabbing at the Alawai Canal, and I would catch Samoan crabs, and we would boil Samoan crabs to eat. My buddies and I, you know, there'd be three or four of us, we'd go weekend nights, and we'd go there like 7 o'clock, and we wouldn't come home till probably 3 a.m. We'd be crabbing all night. So it's something that's in my view because I grew up here, and I'm thinking, okay, where are the opportunities on this island? So just look at this. I'm going to kind of give you a little bit of a different perspective on the question. Okay, yeah, I looked at it because it's in my neighborhood. That's number one. It is the good thing is there's nothing on it. There's the clubhouse, so there's plenty of opportunities. You don't have to displace people. You don't have to knock buildings down. You know, you don't have to spend hundreds of millions of dollars moving people off and demolishing buildings. But look at right across the street. Okay, that's Date Street. If you see Date Street, you see the track, because that's Kaimuki High School. So here is a kind of a opportunity. If we could get this idea on the way, why wouldn't we do something with the athletic field or the open field of Kaimuki High School? We have these kinds of opportunities all over the place. McKinley High School is another one. As you're promoting Stanley's Aloha Stadium, I think that's a tremendous opportunity. But we need to look in our backyard. And that's, you know, what this image is titled Transforming a Gym in Our Backyard. We need to look at a backyard and say, hey, why do we go off and build Kapolei's and Makakilo's and other things? That's fine. We need that. And I'm not opposing any of that. But we need to realize we have gems in our backyard. What can we do to improve our urban environment, as well as provide opportunities for people who want to live and work and stay in Hawaii and be able to afford to do so? So it's just sort of, for me, it's my background as a former student of architecture and urban land economics, but also as a developer for 50 years. You know, I'm always looking at property. It's sort of ingrained in my spirit. And so I'm always, you know, all kinds of opportunities for us to do things better. The natatorium, how long has the natatorium sat there unused? It can be done. Something there can be done and improve that place.
We've talked a lot about the young people who would benefit by the construction of all this affordable housing, and we've talked about how to minimize traffic impacts. One of the main ways that young people are able to make a living in high-cost environments like Hawaii these days is remote working. And of course, for that, you have relatively lower traffic impacts, and you need, among other things, high-speed broadband access. How important is that high-speed connectivity to the success of a project like this?
Critical. I think high band is critical to any economy, any place. I mean, if we want to stay abreast with the world, we being the most isolated place in the world, in the middle of the Pacific, we need to be able to communicate thoroughly, effectively, in a timely way, and broadband helps us do that. We can't sit alone and expect that we're going to forever build our economy on the visitor industry. It's an important aspect of it, but we need to look at other opportunities. We need to teach, train, educate our young people so that they can do far-reaching projects, create event opportunities, no matter where they are. And you can't do it without broadband. You know, it's like sending a message of pigeon out or building buggy whips. In order for us to stay in the contemporary world on a day-by-day basis, we need to communicate, and we need to get information, good information, on a timely basis. And that, to me, is why this kind of thing is so critical, because we've been kind of laid back now. We've been fussing around with how do we take care of the flooding from the Mauka streams. We haven't done anything. What's going to happen tomorrow if we have a big flood? It's going to have a huge impact. And all we can do at that moment is bemoan the fact that we didn't do anything. So we need to move on.
Yeah, great. Well, Sanford, we've come to the end of our time with you today. I wanted to thank you for presenting such an ambitious idea. You've kindly made your email address available to our attendees today, Sanford Murata, SanfordMurata @gmail.com. And so I'm sure you'll be getting a lot of messages of support, questions of the feasibility, and so on. But I most of all just wanted to thank you for thinking big and for thinking of the future generations of Hawaii who don't have housing and who are therefore forced to leave for the mainland and abroad. We need everybody's ideas to tackle that huge issue, which I believe is the biggest issue facing Hawaii. So thank you.
Thank you, Stanley. Really, really, truly my pleasure of participating in your series. I'm so very happy that you're leading the way. I'm your chief cheerleader. We need to promote the kinds of things you stand for and attempting to do, but we need to get it done. Thank you, everybody, and thanks for your kind attention.
All right. Thank you, everybody, and we'll see you on the next webinar, Our Homes, Ending the Housing Crisis.
Thank you so much for joining us for this episode of Our Homes, Ending the Housing Crisis. And thank you for being part of the solution.